Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Preachers Forum podcast. I am so glad you are joining me for this episode, which is part of a series I've been doing for a little more than a month now here on the Preachers Forum podcast. I have been calling it Mind Shift. And basically, it is the mind shift that a person goes through when he or she is questioning everything. And that is what I am all about. That is what the Preachers Forum podcast and website, preachersforum.com, is all about. Critical thinking about God, the church, and spirituality. I am your host, Dr. Clint Haycock. I'm coming to you from a beautiful sunny day here on the Rock in North Wales, where I live with my wife, Lisa. We have lived here in the United Kingdom for almost 12 years, and we absolutely love it here. We have the chance to travel. We have the chance to expand our horizons, and our lives have completely changed. Our lives have completely been transformed from years ago when I used to be the pastor of a church in the Portland, Oregon area. In fact, I look back on those times when I was leading a church. I was an elder and a pastor, and I talk about this in my Rock and Roll Soul podcast series, which are available. All the episodes are on Podbean, or they are also on my website, preachersforum.com, where I talk about my story. But, you know, I look back on those days when I was an elder, when I was a pastor, and I think, who was that guy? I don't even know who that guy was. I have had such a mind shift, or as Gary Hayes would say, a theoclasm, where I've had to deconstruct, or in some cases had it done for me, my views on God and the church and spirituality. And so that's why I started this podcast. That's why I write articles on my website, helping people to think critically, think through the issues, coming from a perspective of one who's been there and is currently on the journey as well. And so this episode is the first half of a great conversation that Gary Hayes and I had a few weeks ago up in Liverpool, which, as I say, is starting to feel like my home away from home. I went up there to meet with Gary, and we sat in his kitchen, and we recorded a few different podcast episodes, which are going to be coming up over the next few weeks. This episode today is called Leaving the Church to Find God. Now, why would anybody contemplate leaving the church to find God? And this is exactly the question that Gary and I tackle in this episode, which will actually be two parts because our conversation was so long, we didn't want it to end. So I'm going to present this as two-part series, Leaving the Church to Find God. Now, I've also written a companion article on this very subject, and I explore in more detail some of the theological and biblical bases behind why a person might contemplate leaving the church to find God. And I go into some historical background on what the ancient Israelites believed and their theological worldview. And as we discover, especially during the time of the Babylonian exile, prophets like Jeremiah, Ezekiel, and Isaiah were talking about all these issues in their day. This problem was facing the Israelites too, where it's human nature, I think, for any religion to turn into a rote, formulaic performance whereby people just go through the motions. And we find that all too often within churches today that this same thing is occurring. People are going through the motions. And ironically, you might find yourself leaving the church, which could be nothing more than a conformity factory where you can't find God in a way amongst the formula, amongst the rituals, something that Donald Miller talks about in his book, Searching for God Knows What. He says you cannot have a relationship with an idea. You can't have a relationship with a concept or a theological book. You can only have a relationship with a living person. And as we find all too often, unfortunately, the case, if Christianity becomes a formulaic religion, then you may not be able to find God in a church setting. And therefore, you might have to leave the church to find God. If you want to look at my article, that would be great. The article may well help you to think through some of these issues that Gary and I talk about, both from a biblical and a theological point of view. So I have put the link to the article in the show notes for this podcast, so you can go right there and find the article on my website, preachersforum.com. All right, there's just one more thing I want to say before I give you this conversation with Gary Hayes, and that is I will talk a little bit more about this at the end of the show, how you can get a hold of both myself and Gary on social media. I also want to talk about how you can support the ongoing work of the Preachers Forum on Patreon as well. So stay tuned for that at the end of the conversation with Gary Hayes. So let's get right into it. What about this issue of leaving the church to find God? Listen in to the conversation that Gary and I had, and I hope that it helps you to think a little bit more critically about this issue. All right, everybody, I am here in the heart of Liverpool once again with my good friend Gary Hayes.
Hi, everyone. Really good to be back.
I feel like this is my home away from home now, Liverpool.
And this time we're not in a downtown coffee shop, but we're in my kitchen.
That's true. We are literally sitting in Gary's kitchen, and we've turned the refrigerator off. The dog is hopefully going to be quiet.
Yeah, hopefully. And I've made some really good coffee as well.
That's true. Yeah, we had an amazing cup of coffee. I was going to say that the most British of institutions is tea, but we're having coffee. That's more of an American thing, isn't it? We're all coffee
snobs. I've got some fantastic loose leaf tea that we make in the old-fashioned way with a tea strainer, and it is so superior to the stuff you get out of tea bags.
So are you a tea snob, Gary?
I love tea.
It's funny because I worked with a decorator for a while. I do building and decorating, you know, painting and things like that, and this guy, John, he was a total tea snob. If we go to work at somebody's house doing a job and the homeowner would make a tea in a cup with a tea bag, when the homeowner's back was turned, he would throw it down the drain. He wouldn't drink it. It had to be made in a teapot with loose leaf tea, which most people don't even have anymore.
In fact, you know, I've spent 2 weeks. I could have done it quicker on eBay, but I spent 2 weeks going around stores in Liverpool trying to find an old-fashioned tea strainer. Wow. I eventually found one in Morrison's.
You found a tea strainer. Yeah, it's almost impossible to find it.
The big stores just don't sell them.
Yeah. I'm surprised you couldn't find it on eBay or something like that.
I could have got it done a lot quicker if I'd have done it that way.
Yeah, yeah. No one shops at brick and mortar stores hardly anymore, do they? Unless they need something right away.
Sure.
It's amazing. It's a signs of the time anyway. So Gary and I are here to talk about this interesting topic of leaving the church to find God.
Yay.
Oh, man. Both of us, I suppose, have you left church in
that
sense?
I can't go as far as to say I have left church, because A, we'd have to define church.
Right.
Okay, so I don't know what that means. Yeah. Do I still meet with people who have similar, same interests, who do what we might call worship together? Yes, I do that.
Not in a church building per se.
No.
Could it be in a pub, a coffee shop?
Why not?
In a kitchen?
Yeah, someone's front room in a kitchen. You know, the group of people that I've been meeting with for the last 18 months hire a hall.
Right. Okay. So they are meeting in a building.
We're meeting in a building, as of 2 months ago, but we shut down for the summer, and when everyone comes back in September, I won't be here because I've got a new job in another part of the country, and they're not going to be meeting there anymore. I think the jury is still out as to what's going to happen come September.
So it's kind of up in the air. Now, this is the interesting thing. You said, how do you define church?
Yeah.
Because in my conversation with Steve Austin, that episode about mental health and the church, I made the statement that I still believe in the church, in air quotes. I absolutely do. I'm not a church hater. I believe in it. I did give up on the church about maybe 10 or 12 years ago, but I do believe that there is such a thing, or there should be such a thing, called the church.
Yeah.
But what do we see is so, what we see maybe today is so far removed from what that is supposed to be.
I mean, Jesus, you know, according to the gospel writer, says, I will build my church.
Right. So he was, there was something happening or was going to happen.
Yeah. So did
a
he,
church.
Did, yeah. Did he mean that he was going to form a congregation of people that met in a building and sang praises to his name?
With a paid staff and all the rest of it.
Or did he say one day there's going to be a national or global organization with one man, let's call him Pope, or let's call him Archbishop, and he's going to be the head, and all you people are going to, you know, he's going to organize this thing that, you know, called a denomination or a church.
Yeah, is that what he meant? Because that's certainly his words have been used to mean that, haven't they? You know, well, Jesus meant he's going to build a church and it's going to be a monolith, a worldwide movement with exactly as you described it, very hierarchical. Whatever the denomination is, there's a hierarchy there, isn't there?
There certainly is.
You can be Catholic, Baptist, Presbyterian.
Yeah.
There's always a hierarchy.
Well, men do love their titles, don't they?
Oh, we love them.
They love their positions and, you know,
Yeah. But then you go back to, okay, Constantine. And a lot of people would point to the 4th century when Constantine legalized Christianity, then made it the state religion of Rome. And at that point, you know, one argument could be that in a sense, the church kind of crawled in bed when they crawled in bed with the state, didn't they?
Yeah.
And that's where the rot sort of set in. And a lot of the stuff that we see even today is as a direct result of that move or that decision back then.
That's the way church history, you know, is the way we teach it.
It's the way it's been taught.
You know, we both teach in what you would call a seminary in the States, what we call Bible college here.
Yeah.
And you know, that's the church history that we teach. You know, everything was fine for the first 300 and so whatever years until Constantine became a Christian, and that's almost like was the end of the church.
Yeah, but there's got to be some truth to it because. The fact that the state, when the church decided, well, it wasn't the church's decision. They thought they'd have influence over in the political arena, which they certainly did. If they've got the ear of Constantine and the next few Caesars after that, they're thinking this is a win-win. We're in a position to help people. But what they did, then money started flowing into their coffers. They took over former pagan temples, beautiful buildings, and they dedicated them as churches, and they started getting rich and fat and bloated, and what happens next?
Go. I mean, essentially, the power base changed, didn't it? You've got these followers of Jesus. Let's call them the Jesus cult or the Jesus movement, the way. And they are on the margins.
Persecuted.
Persecuted.
Heavily persecuted at times.
And suddenly this event happens where Constantine has a vision, he wins a battle, and, you know, to condense the whole story down, he becomes a Christian and makes Christianity the empire.
Religion.
Yeah, the universal, hence the word Catholic, the universal religion, because that's what Catholic means. And so now Christianity is no longer marginalized. It's not at the edge. It's no longer in danger. It's not persecuted.
It's at the center now.
And now, it's not long after that that Christianity becomes the persecutor rather than the persecuted.
Exactly. And you see things like the Crusades. If you ever read the sermon, who was it? The Pope who preached the sermon at Clermont? Trying to think of his
Charlemagne?
Name. No, it that launched the Crusades.
Pious or something like
He preached a sermon and he you know said, look, Jerusalem is being overrun by infidels and all the rest of it. We need to launch a Christian army, and they did launch successive Christian invasions of what's now Israel to claim back the Holy Land. A lot of atrocities were committed by the Crusaders, even against their own people.
Yeah.
You know, one of the best trips I ever took, we went down to southern France. We went to Montségur, which is an amazing Cathar castle in the Pyrenees, almost on the Spanish border. And in 1244, there was a brutal crusade launched by the Catholic Church against the Cathars. and they were brutally persecuted, burned at the stake, slaughtered men, women, and children. So yeah, the church becomes the persecutor.
That's right.
Of other, you know, suppressing heresies and everything else.
I would argue that the church is more effective, and we still haven't defined this word church, by the way, but I'm still using it.
Yes.
But the church becomes more effective when it's at the margin of society, because from the margin it can really see what's going on. When you're at the centre of the empire, when you live in Rome, you can't see what's happening on the frontier.
Yeah.
But when you live on the frontier, that's where the action is.
That's where the action is. Now, some another piece of this church history, isn't it, that when the western half of the Roman Empire finally does collapse, the Pope kind of becomes a default or de facto king in a way.
Mm.
So the Pope assumes this you know, even more of a position of power politically as well as religiously from kind of that time on. What would it be, about the 5th century?
Effectively, okay, if you think about it, you know, in a sort of a timeline, the Roman Catholic Church with the Pope at its head effectively replaces the Roman Empire with Caesar at its head.
Yeah, right.
We've got the same kingdom, we've got the same territory, we've got the same people. Yeah. All we've done is we've just changed the labels at the top. Instead of Caesar, we've got Pope. Instead of Empire, we've got Church.
Yeah, so that's basically the story of European history up until the time of the Reformation, in effect, isn't it? You know, where you have the Pope who has unbelievable wealth and power, armies at his command, as we said, commanding the destruction of the Cathars, which they did, and then that launched the medieval Inquisition, and then later that became the Spanish Inquisition, which went spread to the New World, Mexico, South America,
Reformation, with the Spanish. Counter-Reformation.
Yeah.
And
so all these things have rocked the history of the church, and here we are, you know, years, decades, centuries later, living with the legacy of all of this. You know, and what's interesting to me is that as a Christian, you can trace your lineage, whatever your denomination is. It's like a tree, isn't it? The main trunk is, or the roots are Judaism.
That's how I draw it. When I'm teaching this in Bib 101.
Yeah. First year Bible.
I draw a tree with
branches. That's what I do as well. And then at the Reformation, you have the branches splitting into all kinds of, you know, Anabaptists and Presbyterians and Lutherans and all these denominations. So whatever denomination, if you're a part of a denomination, somehow you're part of that tree. You can trace your roots all the way back down to Judaism at the very base of it all.
So here's a question. Which one of those branches is the church?
Ah, now you're starting to get picky here, Gary. Which branch is, or could you say the true church?
The true church, the one true church. Oh, which one?
Does there have to be one?
So is the whole tree the church?
Yeah, that's the question. Because you'd have to then include Judaism because we're part of the roots, isn't it? Jesus was Jewish, all the apostles, the disciples were Jews, the whole New Testament as well as the Old was set in a Jewish Israelite context.
Yeah.
And the faith is comes out of Judaism. So where do we find ourselves today? Which one's the true church?
I think, see, this is the thing that's going to get me into trouble.
Uh-oh.
I've already got into trouble since our last podcast. And if you want, I'll tell you some stories that have happened since then.
We definitely want to hear some stories.
But maybe we've got to change the way that we think about church as well, because we haven't defined it yet, as I said just now. But we're still talking about belonging to. And I think, obviously, there is a belonging to. But we're keeping it inside the confines or the parameters of what we're going to call Christianity. But can the church, does the church exist outside of those parameters?
Yes. So are there secret Christians, or wasn't it Rahner who said there are people out there who unwittingly perhaps, or to put it another way, doing the work of the kingdom?
Yeah.
Which is a conversation that got me and ultimately Gary and our mutual friend Tim in a lot of trouble. Are there people out there who are part of the kingdom or doing the work of the kingdom but don't even know it?
I think anyone who is participating in, whether knowingly or unknowingly, what we would call theologically when we're teaching the Missio Dei.
The mission of God.
There are non-Christians unknowingly, unwittingly participating in the mission of God. My cousin, his name's Fred, great name. Yeah, yeah, Fred. He lives in the south of England in a kind of small Kentish town, and he is sold out for humanitarian aid. He and his wife and a small group of people provide so much care and love and provision for refugees in the south, on the south coast of England. They get Christians vilifying them. They get conservatives coming and saying, "What on earth are you doing? You're encouraging these people to come to us. You know, what are you doing? Why are you doing this?" And they say, "Well, because we're human and we care for humans."
Yeah, just on a basic humanity level, they're humans in need, and I can do something about it.
Yeah.
So there's no religious ideology attached to it, really.
I chatted with him over dinner a year or so ago. We were talking about church and Christianity because, you know, he knows me. We grew up together. I became a Christian in my teens. He left the Catholic Church because we were all born to Irish mothers. Yeah, I mean, so we all had that early Catholic upbringing. He left that. I transitioned out of Catholicism into being a Baptist, and then the whole long story.
The whole thing fell apart.
And so he would call himself an atheist. He doesn't believe in a deity at all, but he believes in humanity.
Yeah, and he's doing amazing, great, good.
Seriously,
well, a lot more than most Christians are.
More than me. I read his Facebook posts, yeah, and I look at, you know, he's tireless in all the things he does, not only for refugees, but for his community, for the town that he lives in. He does so much beyond what I can guess the church does.
Yeah. Now, from a let's analyze that from a, let's say, a more conservative or evangelical point of view. The counter argument would be, wouldn't it? Well, Gary, we applaud the fact that he's helping people, although it sounds like some Christians would not. But they say, look, that's great and good, but he's not going to get to heaven because of that. He's not going to earn his way into heaven because he's done all these amazing things.
No.
And in fact, you know, his righteousness is nothing more than filthy rags, really, because he's not a Christian. He hasn't said the sinner's prayer or whatever it is, and he's not going to heaven. As many good things as he's done for all those refugees and all those people.
Okay, we've got to get ourselves into a real deep theological mire here, because now you've introduced this word heaven.
Yes.
We haven't defined church yet.
That's still out there.
Okay, and now we've got this thing called heaven and going there.
Yes, it's a destination. Mm. There's a golden harp awaiting you on a cloud.
It's a destination, which means it's a place that's not here. It's somewhere else, and we've got to somehow journey towards it or to get there. That's now a theological problem for me.
Why is it a problem?
Because I think that we should be in heaven. I don't think you get to heaven.
It's not a place. Well, and to put it in theological terms, we were talking about this earlier before we started recording, that how do you get into heaven? From that sort of, again, the evangelical point of view, you have to believe a certain set of theological bullet points, whatever you want to call them, and then when you give intellectual assent to those propositions, you are now a Christian, you are now going to heaven.
Yeah. And I said, well, then that means that the crucifixion as a means of, or the salvific event that means that that's really null and void, because all we've got to do is think the right things inside our head, and that thinking becomes our salvation.
Yeah, it's getting into heaven is about thinking the right way. But, you know, Jesus, all over the Gospels, he uses the word belief and believe, doesn't he? Especially in the book of John.
Mm.
It's one of the most common words in the book of John. You know, I have come that you may believe in me. Now, what does he mean? Because that sounds, we could interpret that as an intellectual activity.
Yeah.
I believed one thing, and then the next day I believed something completely different. I now believe in Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Those are his own words, apparently.
I've been listening to Richard Rohr. Here he comes, that again.
You knew you had to put Richard Rohr in there.
Richard Rohr in there. And again, Marcus Borg. And they do some fantastic work around these words. And they would say that this, the word that's been translated believe, is more belove.
Ah, interesting.
Do you belove me in me? Do you belove me? Rather than do you believe in me? So it's not intellectual. It's more at a heart level than at a mind level.
But yeah, once you filter Christianity through the Enlightenment and modernism, then it's reduced to a rational exercise, isn't it?
That's right.
And you can see then why the fundamentalists were so upset with the liberals, the modernists, because they said you have abandoned historic Christianity. Therefore, to be a Christian means you must give intellectual assent to these, you know, four or five really indispensable principles or fundamentals. And that's where the word fundamentalist comes from. You know, Christianity has been reduced to a series of fundamental truths to which you must give intellectual assent.
Well, maybe that's true. To be a Christian, or to be that kind of a Christian, then you do have to tick the boxes of that kind of Christianity's list of criteria to belong. But does that make me a child of God? Does that make me, you know, is that what Jesus had in mind? Is that the Apostle Paul had in mind when we talk about being followers of the way? Is the way a person, or is the way a way?
Yeah, that's what it sounds like, a path, you could say, or a destination, a journey, something that you're on.
So could my cousin, who's doing all this wonderful stuff in another part of the country, be on the way?
To what? Where?
To being human.
At least he's being human, as you said, more so than a lot of people would. Well, it's because, amazing.
I mean, you know, let's go back to the Bible then, and, you know, let's go right to the very beginning, and we read that man was created in God's
image. Yes.
Okay. So, being human is what God created.
I see what you're saying. Being human is what God created. And so what's the implication then if that's the case?
That our greatest worship and service to God is to be fully human in the way that Jesus was fully human. Now, when we look at the life of Jesus, and I remember in the last podcast, I said, Jesus said, if you want to see the Father, take a look at me. This is what God looks like. He looks like loving the unlovable. He looks like feeding refugees. He looks like washing feet. He looks like touching lepers. He looks like feeding hungry. He looks like inclusion. He looks like... Am I making sense? I could go on and give a whole list of... But that's what being human is. And that's what God created. Somehow... I think Jesus was born into a world, into a religious system. Not only was it a religious system, but it was a political system as well. But this religious system that was the antithesis, the opposite of what God had created. And he comes, and Jesus says, no, this is what God looks like. He doesn't look like that big temple with this hierarchy and all of this laws and regulations to try and make God like us and show favor to us. He looks like this.
Yeah, so look at me. Look at the way I treat people.
Yeah.
Look at the way I live. And you'll see God. Yeah. That's God. And you can do that. We can all do that. Those things you just listed, we can be inclusive. We can be loving. We can love the unlovely, touch the untouchables, whoever those are in your life. And that's emulating the model that Jesus himself lived.
I think therein, because Jesus says, about following him.
Yes.
Okay. So, the wife's following the way that he exemplified whilst he was on earth, the way that he showed his disciples that the church soon lost, not all of it, obviously, you know, the church has done amazing things. You know, the church has been a tremendous force for good, but it's also been an awful force for bad, you know, for evil. Okay, but Jesus says, follow me. And I believe that in following him, therein we find salvation.
All right, everybody, thank you for joining myself and Gary Hayes on this conversation about leaving the church to find God. There were so many things that strike me once I go back and listen to the recording. There's a lot of good stuff in there, and as a fan of history myself, you know, it's amazing what Gary and I were talking about, how it's so difficult to separate out what Christianity has become versus what it could be or what it might be in a biblical or scriptural sense. And this all plays into this issue or this topic of leaving the church to find God, because what we find, what we've discovered over the centuries, as Gary said, the church, yes, has been a tremendous force for good. There's no question about it. But equally so, the church has been a tremendous force for evil and bad in the world. And you know, I'm not bashing the church, but let's take an honest look at the situation. What does this all have to do with God? What do the Crusades and the Inquisition, horrible chapters in the church's history over the centuries, what does that have to do with God? And even now we're seeing, especially in North America, how polarized the whole religious establishment versus the political establishment is becoming, with a huge majority of white evangelical voters voting for Donald Trump and continuing to support him, and people like Pastor Jeffress and Paula White and other high-profile evangelical leaders getting so heavily involved in the political process that you have to wonder, you have to ask the question, what does this have to do with the seemingly very simple message of Jesus, the gospel message, whatever that is? So you may find yourself having to think about, maybe I do need to leave the church, go on a journey, and find God, as bizarre and ironic as that may sound. So if you're on that journey, if you're contemplating or you are walking away from the church to try and find God, I would love to hear from you, and I know Gary would as well. You can contact either one of us on Twitter. You can follow us there. Gary can be found on Twitter at Theoclastic, and you can find me at Preachers Forum on Twitter. You can also locate me on Instagram at Preachers Forum. You can send me an email, tell me your story, and I will respond to you, preachersforum@gmail.com. You can also stop by and like my Facebook page, where I constantly am posting up things about new articles and podcasts that are coming out, so you can get kind of a sneak preview there. And you can find that at facebook.com/thepreachersforum. And as I mentioned, I've written a companion article to go along with this series on my website, preachersforum.com. And finally, if the work of the Preachers Forum has helped you at all to think critically about God, the church, spirituality, or really any other topic, you can also support my work that I'm doing. It helps me pay for things like podcast hosting and equipment and travel and all kinds of other expenses to do this podcast. You can go to patreon.com/preachersforum. For as little as $1 a month, you can support my work, and this gets you access to a private Facebook group so you can join the conversation with the other supporters there on Facebook. And so stay tuned for next Friday's episode, the second half of the conversation that Gary and I had as we wrap up this discussion of leaving the church to find God. So thank you for joining me. I am your host, Dr. Clint Haycock. This has been another episode of my Mind Shift series of podcasts right here on the Preachers Forum. And I'm looking forward to bringing you the second half of the conversation next Friday with Gary Hayes on leaving the church to find God, right here on the Preachers Forum podcast.